What's going on, everybody? Welcome to a brand new episode of the King's Court Podcast here on youtube.com/SackKingsNation. And as you can see, I'm not solo, not back-to-back solo shows. Joining me today, friend of the show, Brendan Nunes. Brendan, welcome back, man. Whew, you've been doing big things since the last time you were here. How you been?
I'm doing good, Vince. I appreciate you having me on, man. Always good to talk some Kings basketball, so glad to be.
Yeah, man, it's been a lot of fun seeing, you know, you, I mean, the last time you were on the show, I don't even, you were still doing the Kings Pulse. Now I see you and you're with James Hamm on the Kings beat quite a bit, filling in for Sean Cunningham. So congratulations there. That must be a lot of fun. I know James definitely probably keeping you busy for sure. But, you know, before we get into any Kings basketball, and I tease this to you prior to going live, the last time you were on this show, my friend, you said on our previous podcast that you are a hooper and that we were going to be playing basketball together and that you were going to play me one-on-one. And I've played a lot of local beat writers out there, and you know who you are. I won't call you out by name. And you were supposed to be my next victim, and you didn't show up. I'm calling you out now live in front of everybody. Are we going to make this game happen?
We'll have to make it happen. We didn't have a date picked or anything.
No, but I invited you multiple times.
You did.
I did.
At some point in the offseason, we'll make it happen because I've been super packed throughout this season. But we will make it happen for sure.
Oh, I know you've been packed. And especially now, like at this point of the season, when it hasn't necessarily turned in the right direction, or at least in the direction that most wanted it to turn at that trade deadline, Brendan, when the Kings acquired Domantas Sabonis in that big trade for Tyrese Haliburton. Everyone said, what's your thoughts on it? I don't even want to get your thoughts on that. I want to just jump right into topic number one, which is this. We've seen them, for five games now between the Ox and the Fox, Sabonis and De'Aaron. What has been your initial thoughts of this pairing? Do you think this works?
I think that they work. I think that those two guys play well together. I think specifically, like, you see Fox look a lot more comfortable with the ball in his hands more often compared to how it was with Tyrese. Like, I think we're definitely seeing Sabonis help Fox. I think that we've seen moments where Fox is helping Sabonis, but I think that end of it, of really optimizing Sabonis, still needs to be worked through a little bit. But he has played pretty well since coming to Sacramento. You know, he's still averaging 17 points, 13 boards, almost 6 assists. Like, Sabonis is still having his nights. I think it'd be nice to see them both have nights together a little bit more often. Mm-hmm. But I think those two guys have been really good. It's really everybody outside of that struggled, right? Like, they don't have... While I do think that pairing is really good, their clear weakness is shooting. Correct. And it's two guys that benefit getting to the basket as much as possible and getting as close to the rim as possible. You need three other elite shooters around, or at least really good shooters, not below average, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. And right now you have one, it feels like Harrison Barnes, who isn't shooting enough threes, to be honest. Justin Holiday, Dante DiVincenzo been inconsistent. Davion Mitchell's been inconsistent. Trey Lyles just isn't enough to be a starting guy in the league. So I really like what we're seeing with Fox and Sabonis. I think it's obvious, though, that the team still needs to do more.
Yeah, for me, I think the shooting, it was obvious once the trade was made that shooting was going to be an issue. There was hopes that we were going to see Justin Holiday's shooting percentages carry over with the Kings. It just doesn't seem it's happened that way. And honestly, I watch a lot of Pacers basketball, and I did prior to this trade even happening. They were one of my favorite teams to watch, and I have no idea why. Don't ask me why, Brendan, because they were horrible as well. But I feel like they run different types of sets for Holiday where they're just basically running Buddy Hield plays for Justin Holiday, and that's not necessarily the best way to utilize Justin Holiday. He's more of a off-ball mover, set him a back screen so he gets to the corner, catch and shoot from Sabonis on a pitch-around pass. I mean, I believe you were the one who drew out the stat first for everyone to see in Sacramento that a large percentage of Sabonis' assists came from Justin Holiday. And I don't think we're really seeing that now. I think you've seen Sabonis really get a majority of assists through Harrison Barnes. He's one of the best at just cutting to the basket when Sabonis is actually charging there. But the shooting has definitely been a problem. And another player for me that I've had head-scratching moments with, where over the last five, maybe it's been a little bit better. He's finally starting to find his legs. But I'm still feeling uncertain about Dante DiVincenzo. What are your thoughts on Dante DiVincenzo, seeing him play for the Kings so far?
Yeah, I've been a little surprised, you know, like, I guess when the trade happened, it was like, wow, they really got DiVincenzo for Bagley, you know, and everybody was kind of giving the Bucks a hard time that they got, what, Serge Ibaka and like one or two second round picks for DiVincenzo. And everybody's like, what's going on here? And as I kind of started to like listen to some Bucks guys' takes on this, and they were like, well, Dante just hasn't been good this year, you know, like, he's coming back from injury, and I think that that was a big aspect of this, because he started what I think is 66 games last year for the Bucks that ended up winning the championship, but he went down game two of the first round of the playoffs, so he wasn't really part of that playoff run for them or anything, but he's still starting for the team that ended up winning the championship. So I was a little surprised. Like, I've loved what he's brought on defense, and like he said at practice today, you know, like he knew that this was going to be a process when he came in. They won like 20-something games, and that he wants to go out there, be the energy guy, and that be infectious. And I think that we see that on defense. But I've been surprised that he gives me a couple moments of kind of some Buddy Hield PTSD kicking in of, did we really just need to shoot that? But I feel like those have toned down a little bit. And yeah, you just get like one a game right now. It feels like for these last like three, four games, you get one shot a game from Dante where you're like, all right, that was a little much. But aside from that, like, he's been shooting decently recently, and a lot of it is like catch and shoot, 47% from three, pull-ups, 15%. And he's shooting like a third of the amount when it comes to pull-ups, but that's kind of the difference for me. I'd like to see him start a little bit more. So I've been like happily seen kind of, I think, as expected on defense, but the offense, there's a couple moments where I'm like, whoa.
Yeah. Franklin, I'm sorry if I pronounced your last name wrong. He's the beat writer for KHDK Sports 1140. Yeah,
Carticelli.
Carticelli. There you go. Hey, look, without you, Brennan, what would I have done with that last name? Thank you. He says DiVincenzo over his last five games, 11 points, 5.4 rebounds, 3.6 assists, 1.8 steals. Like you said, defensively, he's been great. 41% from the field and 44% from three-point range as a 27 minutes per game, essentially. It's starting to get there. I think the ankle injury is, you can't, I don't think I'm willing to use that as an excuse anymore for the inconsistent play. But you're right. I see those Buddy Hield moments a little too much for me. I think the only thing that is a true benefit to those little Buddy Hield blunders, or the Buddy blunders that everyone called when he was here, is at least he's playing defense, and his, you know, aggressiveness to get a rebound is a lot of fun to watch. And I think it's time to see him as a starter. I want to see him next to Fox as a backcourt mate, and really try a lineup where, as a starting lineup, it's Sabonis, Barnes, Holiday, DiVincenzo, and Fox. I think that's something that the Kings really need to start looking at. And especially with, and you can confirm this or not, but it came out yesterday, I believe, that the new rule is anybody can take up the basketball, correct? There's no designated ball handler that brings the ball up anymore.
I didn't see that like specifically said anywhere, but I think that makes sense. Like, from what I feel like we've seen that, yeah.
Especially in that game against the Knicks yesterday, where
right,
Josh Jackson, who never sees the floor, gets right, early second quarter action and decides he is playing that day. He said, if I'm in the game, I'm making things happen, which was, it was interesting to watch. I don't know if I want to see a lot of that, but if you let him get some minutes so he calms down a little bit, because if he's going to play, let him play a little bit slower. I think that'll be more fun to watch, but that was something. Moving on to the power forward position, we have Trey Lyles. We've been seeing a lot of Trey Lyles lately. And where has Chimezie Metu gone? Because I don't really feel that Trey Lyles has been the best fit. He had that one good game against OKC. The Kings obviously have a hole at that power forward position. What's been your thoughts at that four spot, whether it's been Lyles or Metu or anything? What do you think the answer is there?
Yeah, I think it's weird. I think the issue is they don't have an answer for the four. I like what you said. I like probably sliding Justin Holiday to the three, playing Barnes at the four, I think is your best option. And then, like, ideally, if Terrence Davis was healthy, he'd be your three, I think. I mean, really, you need somebody better this offseason. But I think with what you're working with right now, like, I like going I mean, my favorite lineup is probably Fox, Davion Mitchell, Dante DiVincenzo, Harrison Barnes, Domantas Sabonis. I get you're small, but you get your gritty defenders out there who can also move the ball. And I think that Davion is a better three-point shooter than the numbers have kind of gone for him this year. And I think he's just dealing with a transition for what is his first year in the NBA. So I think the issue is that they just don't really have an answer to the four. Like, Trey Lyles has been all right. Like you said, he had that OKC game. He is somebody that I think is, like, respected from three, which is probably pretty valued, but he doesn't shoot very many of them, right? I saw a couple of Detroit fans joking on Twitter about, are you tired of the pump fakes yet? And ever since they said that, I've noticed how many pump fakes there is from Trey Lyles all the time.
But they also think Marvin Bagley's playing really good right now.
It's true. It's true. it's easier when you're not worried about winning games, right?
That's true.
But I think, like, Trey does an okay of attacking closeouts, putting the ball on the floor, posting up in moments where you need him to, I guess, like rebounding. Like, I think he's fine as your backup four. I think asking him to be the starter is too much. I think the issue is that, like, Chimezie Metu fits that same description. I think that Mo Harkless fits that same description. Like, they just don't have a starting four outside of Harrison Barnes. And so you're kind of just forced to try a bunch of things. But it is really weird that Gentry throughout this whole year, like, I know Mo Harkless wasn't available last game. He might have not been available the game before either. I want to say he was, actually. But he's been a little shaky on availability recently. But it's so weird how we see these guys go from Harkless just in the starting lineup for a good handful of games and then all of a sudden not playing at all. Or you see the same thing with Chimezie Metu, or Trey Lyles went from not playing to all of a sudden being a starter and getting a good handful of minutes. So, like, I think that they're, you know, we're almost 70 games into the year and they're still searching for answers at the four, which is an issue. Like, it's the clear hole on this team, right?
Yeah, it's clearly the hole. So that it brings me to my final idea here, and being that it'll open up the idea for what we have for our next topic. What about the idea of trying it? Just start it and see what happens. Domantas Sabonis and Rashawn Holmes as a pairing.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, you got to put your best guys out there at some point and try it. I know, like, Bryant West is a guy that really likes the idea of that for that reason, is my understanding. Like, just put your best guys on the floor, which I understand. Rashawn, after the Dallas game, we got to talk to him because he just hadn't been available for a little while. And his thing's weird. Like, why was he out for personal reasons yesterday? We, like, saw him warming up pregame, and then he was just out. That was a really weird one. But we saw him at practice today. And when we talked to him after Dallas, he got asked by James Hamm, like, you know, have you given some thought of, like, what would you need to do to fit alongside Sabonis? And his response was, like, it's pretty simple. Shoot the three. And I thought that was interesting. I mean, I see where he's coming from. I don't know that Rashawn Holmes is a guy that should be shooting threes, but he obviously puts the time in. You know, I think we heard earlier in the year, like, everybody on the team shoots 100 threes every practice, something like this. I could be slightly wrong with that, but, like, we see Rashawn shooting threes every single day. We saw him practicing, like, a pick and pop situation at practice today. So I think that they're going to try it if Rashawn Holmes plays. And I don't hate the idea of trying it because your shooting already sucks, to be honest. So you might as well try to make up for it with a little bit more rim protection. I think it probably doesn't go great, but at this point, I think it's kind of what you said. Like, I don't hate trying it.
You got to just throw your best five guys out there at this point. And it's I was telling people last night during the post-game show, it was – I hope you guys started doing your push-ups. I hope you guys know summer came early because it's tanking season. Grab your nearest tank tops because it's that time. I think mathematically the Kings are technically still in it for the 10th seed, but after seeing these last two games from the Kings having big leads, especially this past one against the Knicks, I'm at the point now where I'm ready to just see these other guys truly start developing and testing new lineups. And if that means cutting the minutes, even if that means cutting the minutes down from 30 plus minutes a night for Fox and Sabonis, but try them in different types of sets. Try them with Rashawn Holmes as a starter. Try it with Damian Jones as a starter next to Sabonis. Put that type of pairing in different situations so you can see what works, because at this point, we know what's not working, and we know what is. I mean, when you surround Fox with shooters and he's able to move fast and the shots are dropping, we obviously see that's going to be the thing that is successful for the Kings when they have Fox as a point guard and Sabonis as their next best ball handler, arguably their best passer on the team. Surround them with shooters. But I just don't think you can keep running the same exact thing over and over and over again and expect wins, especially when teams are adjusting to you and they can't shoot and they know you can't shoot, and they just keep daring you to shoot.
Right, and it seems like this is the halftime adjustment every single time, right? Where teams are like, they're getting in the paint so much, let's just start. Or like Alvin said after yesterday, I think that teams think they can guard Sabonis in single coverage, and then they realize they can't. And once they start doubling, the Kings can't punish them because they can't hit any shots. Or like halftime, Fox is playing so well and everybody's packing the paint and nobody can take advantage of that because you just can't hit shots.
Right. And that's what I was telling people yesterday. It's like in the first half, you're getting them. You're getting them with your speed. They're trying to go one-on-one against you. They're pressing up on you against the three-point line, so Fox gets to utilize his speed. Sabonis, like you said, gets those one-on-ones down low. He sees the double team. He gets to get Harrison Barnes. Everything is looking good. Everything is looking like, wow, this works. It's when that adjustment happens. How come you're not seeing the Kings adjust? So that brings me to this. How much pressure do you put, or how much do you think the problem is with it just being that Alvin Gentry is the head coach? Because that's the biggest topic I always get to is, I think it's pretty clear that Gentry isn't the guy for this team. But I also don't want to always point the finger as it's Gentry's fault or it's the ref's fault. But at the same time, maybe I'm wrong. So what are your thoughts? How much do you blame a lot of these losses and a lot of these non-adjustments on Alvin Gentry?
It's hard because it's got to be like some combination of both, right? Like, yeah. I don't know that Gentry's been any better or worse than Luke. And like, obviously Luke wasn't cutting it. And I think for good reason. So I think it is an aspect of like, if you're the other team's making a big adjustment at halftime and the Kings are not making an adjustment and getting beat after the break every single time, then like, you got to point to coaching a little bit. But at the same time, like the things that we pointed out of the roster just isn't really good enough to surround those two guys, I think is an issue. So it's got to be a little bit of both. But I do think that like when it comes to next season, that they do need to make a really big coaching improvement, because what it is for me is that like there's nobody on the team that I can point to that I'm like, you know, Gentry is getting the most possible out of this guy. Like if you want to say Fox Sabonis, I guess maybe. But that kind of feels like them just working together and making things happen on their own. It doesn't feel like, you know, it's Gentry's some real creative offensive scheme or something like that. They're not very good defensively. The thing we hear nonstop is pace. And to me, a team that your biggest strength is playing in pace just means you're not that good of a team, because every team can play really good in the open court. But you can't rely on that, but not also have like San Antonio's a team that plays good in pace. But they have a really good defense that they fall back on, so they get more opportunities in pace. It's tough for me when you have a team that is not good on defense, but also not good at half-court offense. Like, that's just a bad team. So they have a poor roster that Gentry doesn't have a lot to work with, but I think we've seen enough of Gentry to know that, you know, he's not the answer here. I don't think that he's the best-case scenario. He hasn't done anything to, I think, like win me over for this job. And I think that it was already an uphill battle for him to like stick around.
For sure. Brendan Nunes of the King's Pulse podcast, as well as the kingsherald.com. And you can find him occasionally next to James Hand on the King's Beat podcast, joins us here on the King's Court podcast. A lot of podcasts going out right there. A lot of advertisement for everybody else. Speaking of advertisement, guys, this show is sponsored by ratecrushers.com. Whether you guys need mortgage insurance, motorcycle insurance, car insurance, or renter's insurance, RateCrushers.com has you covered. Make sure you're not overpaying for that coverage. Again, RateCrushers.com. Go there now and let them know you found them through the King's Court podcast. Brendan, obviously, like I said, it's tank top season. It's time to start seeing the tank, season of the tank. And with that being said, I think we hit on it a little bit, but continuing down the conversation, what more do you want to see for the remainder of this season? Is it less minutes for the key guys like Fox and Sabonis and more minutes for guys like Davion Mitchell or possibly even like a Jeremy Lamb, who I believe is on the final year of his contract, getting more minutes, Josh Jackson? What is it that you want to see, or what do you need to see for these remaining, 12 games, 13 games of the season?
Yeah, I think as much of Fox and Sabonis together as possible. And we've seen a lot of it. Like, I don't think that they're staggering those guys amazingly. Like, Fox plays the whole first and third quarter right now, which leaves him pretty gassed for the fourth. But so I think they're just seeing those guys grow as much together in a two-man game as we can. And when you get that, like, empty side two-man game pick and roll with them, we've seen that play really well. But just who can complement them? Like, Harrison Barnes can, but can he do it a little bit more consistently? Like, I think HB is a guy that when you talk about Alvin, it's like you could work him into the offense a little bit more often, because HB maybe disappears a little bit by himself sometimes, but if you involve him in actions a little bit more, then maybe that doesn't happen as often. So can HB be a number three? I don't think so, but maybe, right? Like, can you put him in a position where he has the opportunity to do that more consistently? But for me, it's really Justin Holiday. Are these shots going to come back around? Do you care? Like, I don't mind seeing Trey Lyles, because he's got this $2.6 million team option of, like, that you have to make a decision if you want to keep him around, which I don't mind. Really, the one for me that stands out the most is Dante, though, right? Like, I would love to see Dante get a chance with his starting group. I think that you get less of these Buddy Hield moments when he's playing alongside the other starters, because, you know, I would think that mentally it's like, there's a difference between playing alongside Fox and Sabonis, knowing that, okay, let's get it back to those guys because we can still run the offense and make something better happen, compared to like just playing with one or maybe playing with neither of them, that Dante just like throws up a little bit more. So I think that the crazy shot attempts could rein back a little bit offensively, and then defensively, I think he's a good complement for these guys. Like, I don't think we've seen enough minutes of Dante alongside Fox and Sabonis, and, you know, see how Davion fits in there as well. But really, like, that's your core that you're working with, right? It's Fox, Sabonis, and then who can complement them the best? I think Harrison Barnes fits. How does Dante? Is Justin Holiday a guy that you're really, really interested in having back next year, or could he be aggregated in a trade? And after that, it's really, really up in the air. You know, we talked about like Rashawn Holmes playing alongside Sabonis. I guess try it, because if it works, then cool. I'm just kind of the belief I don't think it will, but it's something you have to try, right? Because more likely than not, Rashawn's gone this offseason is what it seems like, right?
But I think the writing's on the wall that he's gone, for sure.
Right. Yeah, that's what it seems like. So I think it's seeing Fox and Sabonis work together as best as possible, complement one each other, have a game where they combine for 50 a couple different times, you know, which isn't the craziest thing. Like, it's a big ask. I'm not saying every single game, but 30 from one of them, 20 from the other, like, 25 a piece. It's not the craziest thing to me. Like, have a couple games where they both are really on like that, and then who can complement them the best? So yeah, that's kind of like what I'm looking for. But where are you at?
Yeah, for me, it's a lot of the same. I think I still want to see a majority of the minutes being with Fox and Sabonis on the floor, but I'm okay with seeing a little bit reduced, I guess, of the two. I'm okay with playing Davion Mitchell, seeing what he looks like as a starter, maybe giving Fox the occasional night off. But in the minutes that we do see Fox and Sabonis on the court, there's a couple of things I want to see from both of them. Number one thing I want to see from Fox is I want to see him taking at least 6 to 8 three-pointers per game, every single game. I want to see that jump shot going, because win or lose, the progression of Fox's game and for him to take the next level as not only just a leader of this team, but as a potential all-star player, which most thought he was going to be last year, is the development of that jump shot. And I feel like he knows that. I feel like the league knows that. And that's something that confidence really, I think, is it comes with his shooting. His mechanics look fine. You know, I don't think his mechanics are horrible. It's just being able to catch and shoot a three-pointer and not catch it, dribble, and then shoot the three-pointer when you're wide open. I feel like he tends to do that way too much. But shooting threes, I want to see him shoot plenty of three-pointers for the remainder of the season. And then with Fox as well, defensively, I'm tired of seeing the lazy overstep on the closeouts where he gets either blown by or just creates an open shot for the opposing team. His closeouts defensively are arguably the worst on the team. It's so hard for me to watch him close out on a defender. That's really hard for me. And then for Sabonis, I think he needs to understand that the Kings are not good at perimeter defense. And it's the same problem that Rashawn Holmes had when he started getting into foul trouble a lot when he came to the Kings, is you can't always be there as the help side. And I get that fundamental basketball says you're supposed to be there to help the guy when the opponent is driving down to the basket. But he continuously gets into these foul troubles, which takes him out of the game. And I think it's starting to build a little bit of frustration because he is getting so many fouls. And that's why we saw, I believe it was his first ejection in his career, again against the Knicks. So from those two, yeah, that's all I really want to see. And like you said, I think it's really time to see what's a building block and what's sand. Like, what do you really see as a core foundation that you're building around? Fox and Sabonis obviously being the two main like building block or building pieces there, but what goes on top of it? What continues to build this house that you're trying to get? As James Hamm said when he was on the show a few weeks ago, it's like you have the edges of your puzzle now figured out with this 1-2 combo. Start filling in the picture. And what is the bigger picture here? Are you looking for more defense? Are you looking for shooting? And I think it's obvious shooting is going to be the number one thing they're going to have to attack. So for me, it's, I want to see smarter basketball, but I'm okay with the main guys, Fox and Sabonis, getting less minutes. But when they're on the floor, I want to see them working on the parts of their game that they know needs to improve for them to improve as a team next season. That's just me.
Yeah, no, I definitely am with you there. And I think that getting another big like threat on this team is something that obviously would do wonders for them. I guess every team could say that, but I think that like there's a path to that happening, right? Where if you do jump into the top four, which I get is optimistic, but also not the craziest thing, like they're going to have a 30-40% chance of being able to do that in all likelihood. And whether you take somebody with that top four pick, or if you swap it for, I don't know, a John Collins, or you never know who ends up being like disgruntled and wants to change the scenery, right? Like nobody expected Russell Wilson to go to Denver, for example. Like, I know it's a different sport, but you never know what happens in an offseason and who all of a sudden becomes available. So I think that Sabonis has to have been step one. And it seems like everything that we've heard, like while Sabonis is a win now move, it wasn't all about this season. Like they have right. Two more years with him. He's 25 years old, same age as De'Aaron. And it feels like there's got to be another significant splash this offseason.
Exactly. And that's what I'm telling people. Like when I say win now, like I was telling people on Twitter, I was like, you can take all of the receipts that you want, but the Kings have a better chance and could, I said will, because I really love this trade. I thought the Kings got the best player in the trade when it was Haliburton for Sabonis. But that pairing of a 1-2 punch of Fox and Sabonis can get you to the playoffs. It all depends on how you fill out around it, which brings us to the final topic here on the show. And you know Brendan's a good podcaster when he starts giving these little nice little segues, like, you know, it's all about what you get and blah blah blah. I mean, Brendan, you're a pro, man. look, there's guys out there that the Kings have been looking at. John Collins has been a name. I've been very adamant, and it's even been known that the Kings have shown interest in Pascal Siakam. And if the Kings do land a top five pick, I think you and I, even the last time you were on the show, we talked Pascal Siakam or Ben Simmons. So that's where I found that conversation actually very interesting to bring it up now is, what is it that Toronto would really want in a deal for a guy like Pascal? Because for me, offseason wish list is the Kings pursue Pascal Siakam with Rashawn Holmes because they need that center, that top five pick, top eight pick, and maybe a future something else, maybe another player in that deal. But that seems something realistic to me, but that's the top of my wish list. What about you?
Yeah, I think Pascal is definitely an interesting one. Like, the open court with that trio would be insane. And the idea I think I've seen with some Toronto guys is that, like, if he had less responsibility, he'd go back to being that 37-38% three-point shooter if he could just focus on more catch-and-shoot opportunities than kind of what we've seen. So I think he could work there. He's got the defense, right, versatility and everything like that. So it's interesting to me. I definitely like John Collins. I think if you jump into the top two, you just take Jabari Smith or Chet Holmgren and don't even overthink it. That's personally where I'm at. I got to dive into those guys a little bit more. That's kind of on my plate this week. I think something small, like, could you do PJ Washington for Rashawn Holmes? And then you're also adding, say your pick stays at six or seven. So all it's like PJ Washington, and then you're also adding a guy that is a shooter in the draft, and then you also like use your MLE, for example, or like, yeah, I think it's interesting. Like, Rashawn Holmes is your piece, right? And it maybe you just move him. Like, I don't know that the Clippers do this, but I like a Marcus Morris for Rashawn Holmes. I think some people have strong feelings about Marcus Morris as a person, which I understand, but like, you know, physicality, size, and a really good 3-point shooter. On a lot of volume. But I think that it's either you are combining Rashawn Holmes and your pick to take a big swing for a Siakam, or even OG Anunoby on that team is somebody that I would freaking love in Sacramento. Who knows what like his availability is, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, like him or like a John Collins, if you're combining the pick, or if not, then you're just talking about Rashawn Holmes and, you know what, Chimezie Metu and a second round pick or something for PJ Washington or Luke Kennard or Marcus Morris or something smaller like that. But it feels like it would have to be the latter of a big move, unless, you know, they're sitting at five or six, can make a small move for, say, a PJ Washington, and then also draft a AJ Griffin or something like that. Like, if there's a guy that they love at pick six, then maybe that still happens, but it's got to be a move in some sort.
I have a move. Again, it's one that I've brought up on the show before, and I got a lot of mixed reviews on it, and it does involve the Hornets. So look, the Gordon Hayward situation there, he fits that team. He's nice, but he's obviously the third option. And I think you slide in a guy like Harrison Barnes, who's better defensively and offensively, can do, I don't think he can do it as good offensively is what Gordon Hayward can do, because he can score on all three levels very well as being a good ball handler and passer. But you do a Harrison Barnes, Rashawn Holmes type of deal that gets you back Hayward, PJ Washington, and maybe Book Knight in that type of deal, and see what that type of what that can get you. But I would be not doing my listeners any justice if I don't ask you what your thoughts are about going after Jeremy Grant. Because for me, I've kind of been on the opposite end of the Jeremy Grant, where I'm like, it would be a good idea for the Kings to pursue Jeremy Grant. I think play style wise and the name makes sense. But from everything that you hear about what Jeremy Grant wants as a player, also if you watch him play in Detroit, and even that last season with the Nuggets, how much he needed the ball in his hands, wanted the ball in his hands, I don't necessarily know if I would really want to pay to have that player on this team when you can get a cheaper, younger version in PJ Washington, where you know the Hornets aren't going to be able to pay everybody on that team, right? And he's going to be due for a contract extension here very soon. I believe next season is his last season on this on that deal. That's why I don't think you can trade Rashawn straight up for PJ Washington. You're going to need to add something else anyways. So for the Hornets, if you do a Harrison Barnes or Sean Holmes deal, you get 1 year less of that Gordon Hayward contract, because after next season, there's still one more year after Hayward, where then they would get that additional money, and they still get to have a good player in Barnes. Plus, they get the center that they actually wanted before they settled with Mason Plumlee. And from what I was told, like near the trade deadline, the Hornets were trying to have conversations with the Kings about still acquiring Rashawn. So I'm sure there's still going to be a couple logs in the fire there. Maybe they can go and see if that is still burning. But yeah, what are your thoughts on Jeremy Grant? Like, do you think that's someone that the Kings should really be zoning in on at all? Or do you have everybody else higher than him, like PJ Washington and John Collins and Siakam?
Yeah, I definitely should have missed him. So good call there. Or I shouldn't have missed him. So good call there. I probably have the other guys higher.
Me too.
John Collins, PJ Washington, and forget Siakam. The other one we mentioned. But yeah, Siakam I would have higher as well. It's just like what you said with the stuff that Jeremy that scares me, that like he wants a bigger role, which – that's so triggering, like, for a Kings fan, right? Like, think of Buddy Hield, you think of Willie Cauley-Stein, these guys just trying to do too much, where if you just filled your role, you'd be really damn good at it. But maybe he wants to be a little bit more. I think it is interesting, because if a little bit more means being the number three guy compared to, like, the number four or five that he was in Denver, then, like, that's different, right? Because last year he shot 36% on catch and shoot threes, but then 26% on those pull-ups. And the pull-ups are what you're seeing a little bit more. Like this year, 34% catch and shoot, 29% on these pull-ups. But he likes to be trying to do that a little bit more, it seems like. Like that's where he can expand his game, it seems like, is the idea. Or even pull-up twos. And it's just like, he's not very great at creating his own shot. If he's okay with not doing that all too often, then sure. I don't hate paying him $22 million a year. I don't love the 27, but like a little over 20, sure. Like having him and Harrison as your wings, I think is really good. Like you need a Jeremy Grant defender on this team. He gets steals. He protects the rim, which Sabonis has surprised me with how good he's been defensively. Mainly that like he's not a negative on defense. Mm-hmm. I don't think he's a huge positive, Sabonis that is, but he's not a negative either, which I will take for all the offense that he gives you. But you still need rim protection, and Jeremy Grant is one of the few guys that can hit threes and give you rim protection at the four. But Siakam, Collins, PJ Washington, like there's not a lot of these guys, but there's enough other ones that I would probably look in a different direction first. But I don't know. I don't know that I'd be all surprised if somebody told me that Jeremy Grant was going to be on the team next year.
I would say that I would be very surprised if he's not a Blazer next season. I'll just put it that way. I think Jeremy Grant's going to the Blazers.
I see that.
And you know, maybe there's a move for the Kings to go after like a Josh Hart. Maybe Josh Hart isn't like a key piece there in Portland. I think that's someone I would have on my wish list as well. But I think you and I are pretty clear with what we're looking at in terms of our early wish list for the Kings for the upcoming offseason, which is like solidifying that 3-4 role, because Barnes is a nice answer, but I mean, is Barnes a clear answer? Like, is he for sure that guy you want to keep having on this team, being that he only has one more? I mean, you could probably get a lot for Harrison Barnes. And I actually watched your show just recently with Sam Amick, great get, and he said on your show that near the deadline that a team like Utah was interested in Harrison Barnes. But what's that type of return if a team like Utah is going after him? So I just also feel that the league is turning into where you need that defensive, lengthy type of 3-4 combo, like a Mikal Bridges or a Jared Vanderbilt, Dorian Finney-Smith. So I think Harrison Barnes just makes a lot of sense as a 3-4 combo. You don't really want to get rid of that unless you know you're getting that same type of piece back, or you're going after that big name, John Collins or Siakam. So if it's Rashawn Holmes in that pick, I think that still puts you in the conversation. Maybe you have to add in one more because you're the Kings You have to pay that Kings tax, but yeah, those are going to be my big ones. Any clear shooters that you're looking at? Because one I'll throw at you as an idea, as someone that I think the Kings could look at as well, is Rashawn Holmes to the Nets for Joe Harris.
Yeah, that's an interesting one that I hadn't thought of. Yeah, I mean, I like that. I think that you know, I've had, like James has mentioned, James Hamm has mentioned Luke Kennard, who I think is kind of interesting. He doesn't fall under peer shooter. Like I like Kyle Anderson in general, just like a guy that passes well. Yeah, it's just like a smart player, right? Passes well, plays good defense, can hit threes. Probably doesn't shoot at a good enough rate to be the right complimentary guy. But other pure shooters,
Doug
Pat
McDermott.
Connaughton, maybe. Yeah, like I don't mind McDermott. Is like, I've been talked into this more and more as the year's gone on, but like Bobby Portis,
no,
you know, I talked
stop.
About like physicality. No. I don't really like Portis as
don't
a player.
Don't do that.
But he's your 3-point shooter, right? He's shooting really damn good from three. He's not going to let the team get punked, I guess.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's interesting. I mean, my initial reaction is the same as you, but I got talked into it a little bit more as I kind of go throughout the year, because there's not that many good names to list, you know?
Yeah.
Otto Porter.
Ray in the chat here, Brendan, says the Kings aren't going to start Dante DiVincenzo because he'll become a restricted free agent and is going to demand more money. Do you think that's true?
I think it could be. I think it could be an aspect of it. I don't think it should be, because I think that you should pay that guy whatever he deserves, and you don't know what he deserves until you see how he complements Fox and Sabonis
mm-hmm.
best.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that totally could be. Yeah.
King should start Josh Jackson at the four for defensive purposes and find out if he can adapt. Literally have nothing else to lose. I think we talked about that a little bit, right? Just throw your best players out there. It's time to see what you got on that floor. Put your tank tops on, guys. Start doing pushups. It's tank top season.
Yeah. Josh Jackson is dressed in a tank top more than anybody else. That's for sure.
that if Josh Jackson's on the floor and you're saying start him, you're definitely wearing a tank top over your neck.
Yeah.
The Kings' logo should just be a tank top because it's taking season. But last player I'll throw at you, and I told James it, and he wasn't a huge fan, and it was what's his name? I'm forgetting his first name, but oh, Malik Beasley. Man, it was right there. I was about to say Miles
yeah.
Bridges. But I think Malik Beasley makes sense.
He could be interesting, and I don't know that it takes like all that much. Like, I think that if you're talking Alex Len and whatever filler salary you need to go to Minnesota, like, maybe. I don't love Beasley. He's got like off-court things, and he's a little Buddy Hield-ish to me. But he's interesting.
What about Duncan? Duncan
Robinson?
What if you call Miami and be like, hey, I got HB here. You give me Duncan Robinson and maybe something else off that bench. Maybe, you know what I mean? Like that would make sense in my opinion. I mean, he's a little.
You do need a shooter like that. I really like HB. As much as HB frustrates the heck out of me and I want more, if you get a guy that's your number three, I would love to keep HB as the four.
I agree.
But
I think
the issue is that he's one of your best assets to go get a better guy.
Yeah, I agree. I think HB makes the most sense if you're going after PJ Washington, John Collins, Siakam. And I think that's where we're the most clear. It's the Kings need to solidify that 3-4 spot. And then shooting is, as much as a hot commodity it's going to be, it's always going to pay to be a shooter. Like Buddy Hield deserved that money as much as he frustrates people. Joe Harris deserved that money. Duncan deserved his money. Shooting is always going to be out there. But I also think it's the easiest like skill to find. And I know that sounds bad, but I just feel like you can always find a good shooter somewhere out there. I mean, look, Nick Stauskas is back in the league. Shooter.
Yeah.
Brendan, you got a little Nick Stauskas in you, Brendan?
I think I was a crappy high school team shooter, but I think I'm more of a coast-to-coast guy.
Are you a coast-to-coast guy?
That's more of what I would say, yeah.
If you had to say what your play style was as a basketball player in a one-on-one game or even like a 3-on-3 half-court game, what do you say? What would be your player comp?
Well, you know, this isn't popular among Kings fans, but my favorite guy growing up a Celtics fan was Rondo. So I do think I got a good bit of Rondo in me. I love these like BS fakes, and I'm a finisher and a passer.
So you'll pass up a wide open layup to give somebody else a three?
I don't know about that. Maybe don't take it too literal, you know?
Hey, if you want to know my skill set, I'm going to say I'm like Wes Matthews mixed with Andre Miller.
There you go.
Wes Matthews with Andre Miller, I think, would be like my ideal comp.
We sound like a good compliment here.
Yeah, but you know, your skill is probably going to be way better, because if you have any Rajon Rondo, and you're saying Boston Rajon Rondo, that's not bad. But I heard you're tall.
Depends on Rondo, right?
I heard you're pretty tall, and you're gonna be a challenge for me. So I'm excited for this one-on-one game, man. We're gonna have to play at some point. But Brandon, before I let you go, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on the King's Court, man. Welcome back. Hope to have you on again real soon. But before I let you go, let the fans out there know where they can find you online or what they can be expecting from you for the remainder of the season.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Vince. Kind of just what you mentioned earlier. A lot of it is King's Pulse podcast and any sort of writings going on at the King's Herald and occasionally in some other spots that I guess I would tweet out if they went up anywhere else, because there's a couple different spots. But mainly just King's Pulse, King's Herald, man. And can't say thanks enough for having me on, Vince.
Yeah, follow him, guys, at Brendan Nunes, NBA. It's a fun Twitter follow. He's at every single King's game, becoming a very known beat reporter here in the Sacramento area. Shout out to him. Where can they find your podcast?
Every listening platform, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, just doing YouTube now as well too, actually, video on YouTube.
YouTube.com/KingsPulse?
Yes, Kings_Pulse for everything. There's a Twitter for the King's Pulse account. Anything would be Kings_Pulse.
You guys follow him at Kings_Pulse on YouTube, youtube.com/Kings_Pulse. Brandon Nunes, NBA. I've been your host today. My name is Vince Miracle. You guys can follow me on all social media platforms of at VM Center. Shout out to our sponsors, ratecrushers.com. Again, guys, if you guys need any of your insurance, make sure you're not overpaying for that coverage. Go to ratecrushers.com and let them know that the King's Court sent you. Thanks you once again. And until next time, everybody, peace.